I don't think it's dependent on fusion rockets, but it's fusion rockets are certainly an additional enabling technology. The reason I think you can do it minimum energy. I've always felt that way. You can do the 9 months out, 18 months there, 9 months back, plus or minus a month or two, on, depending on when you actually leave. And that that is a very viable scenario. The other thing the moon adds to that scenario, though, is the availability of relatively low-cost resources. Remember that you may be aware that if you produce helium-3 on the moon by heating the lunar regolith to 800 degrees, say, to release the helium from the various minerals, particularly iron, titanium oxide, you also produce great abundance of hydrogen, also a lot of water, because hydrogen will react, the solar wind hydrogen reacts with the oxides in the soils to produce water, and from the water you can produce oxygen. So you have other resources that you can use to go to Mars, not only as consumables, but it also gives you a significant amount of water that now can be used as a shielding device, not just a consumable, but something that you would use as permanent shielding from solar particle events and cosmic radiation. So that the moon fits in very nicely. Now, is it absolutely necessary to go to the moon before you go to Mars? No. I think you can do it now. It's just a very, very expensive proposition, and you're going to have to recreate the heavy lift launch capability and independent of any kind of resource that might pay for it.
Unfortunately, I think it's time for you to go.
Is that it?
How are we going? We've got about 2 minutes until...
One question.
One question. One quick one. So one more question. Fantastic. Yes.
As a rather small country in Australia, what sort of role do you think, if any,
I think the size of the role Australia can play it depends on the motivation of the people of Australia. How hard you want to work at it to be a player. If you can convince some large investor to be the initial investor in Helium-3 or related businesses, and there are some related businesses before you ever get there, then that role can be very large. If it turns out to be a multinational effort, which I think is going to be very difficult, but if it turns out to be that, I think it's just a question of can you develop the political constituency in Australia to ensure that Australia participates in that coalition.
No idea how far off the agenda that is here at the moment. It's remarkable. There's a few things to get through first. Well, we're going to have to call it stumps there.
One more?
Wow, this is great.
Well, if we can get an investor to begin this process, then clearly Australia is one of the most advanced centers for mining of a variety of kinds, including large tonnage mining, and more so now clearly than the United States, because we've made it very difficult to do that kind of thing in the United States. But any kind of business enterprise that's put together to go to the moon to obtain helium-3 and other resources is going to have to draw on the whole international community. You get your expertise where you find it, and that's the nice thing about business. You tend to work and go after the best available technology at the lowest possible cost. Now, the first business doesn't have anything to do directly with mining on the moon. The first business we're looking at is actually the creation of medical isotopes in small fusion reactors, particularly positron-emitting isotopes that are used in what's called positron emission tomography. And that is a very rapidly increasing, the use of positron emission tomography is very rapidly increasing in the United States. I think it's going to be worldwide. And there's a very, very interesting marketplace for portable devices to produce these isotopes, rather than be dependent on centralized cyclotron production of those isotopes. So that's where we're working our first business plan. And we almost have, in our experimental device, we're almost at the level of fusion necessary to make those kinds of devices practical. It's not a break-even. We're not even close to break-even. But we at the University of Wisconsin, in the basement, have a device that's producing about a microwatt of fusion power, steady state, using a technology that's called inertial electrostatic confinement. It's a very simple, straightforward technology. Doesn't need large magnets to make it viable. And at about a watt of fusion power, with several thousand kilowatts going in to produce it, but still not unheard of amounts, we would be in a position to probably field a device for local production of these important isotopes. So that's where our first business is. But you got to realize you got to bootstrap these businesses, because I don't know of anybody right now that's going to let me play with their capital for 20 years or 10 years before they have a return on investment. So we have to give them return on investment early on.
Please thank our guest.
Thank you, everybody.
Harrison Schmidt, there's a lovely bottle of McWilliams Royal Reserve Dry Sherry there for you. Thank you very much. Harrison Schmidt, the last man to walk on the moon, was brought to you today by the letter J and the good people at the Australian Mars Society for Science at the Redback.